I hereby introduce to you, Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Starting a business on your own can be lonely and worrying. Selling online multiplies this issue tenfold. Getting expert help is a great way to reduce anxiety, wasted time, and confusion. The Amazing FBA Mentoring Program is in its fourth year of helping sellers to get started on Amazon. By now, we have former clients who have, starting from scratch, done six figures and even in one case, seven figures a year. Obviously, these are not typical results. These are exceptional people. Nevertheless, we can help you get launched faster, safer, and with a much higher chance overall of success. With clients from Melbourne, Australia, to Manchester, England, we bring a genuinely international perspective. To find out more, go to amazingfba.com/mentoring. Thanks for listening. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show. This is your host, Michael Veazey. Very, very happy to welcome another guest from America. This is time from Los Angeles, home of glamour and film. We have Daisy Pollard of MyProductModel.com. Daisy is what she called a modelpreneur, which is quite a blend of activities. A former Miss Jamaica, the founder of MyProductModel.com, which is an agency for e-commerce entrepreneurs to get incredibly great photography, which is what we're going to focus on in this episode. Also the founder of Brazen Influencers, an agency that links e-commerce sellers and influencers, which is a really hot topic right now. So we'll talk about that in our next episode. So Daisy, warm welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yes, great pleasure. And it's a fantastic topic because it's never going to go out of fashion for people who really, really need to know about great photography on their listing. It's never been more important. So tell us just very quickly what it is you do at MyProductModel.com and let's talk about photography.
Sure. So at MyProductModel.com, we create content for e-commerce sellers on the Amazon, eBay, Etsy, and Shopify platforms, and everything, any online e-commerce platform. We also create content for Instagram feeds, which is the main social media marketing channel that's out there today. We also do copywriting and we sell stock photography for filler photos and placeholders and stuff like that. So we cover the gamut. We also do video, which is the next sexy thing in e-commerce for e-commerce sellers as well.
100%. Yes. Video is very much coming of age now, isn't it? We're beginning to see it on the listings and it started off with just the big brands. Then it was people on the beta program and now it's starting to roll out. So 100%. Yeah, that's going to be, as you said, the next big thing, or it already is the next big thing. It's like, I always think Tim Berners-Lee, who founded the internet, actually British for once, but he said something like the future's already here. It's just not widely distributed yet. And I think that's true for things like Instagram marketing and video. The top people have already been using it for a while. The rest of us are just going, hang on, we better wake up to this. So
yes,
so
very true.
Let's get into the content on the photography side. So first of all, why use a model? It sounds like an obvious question, but there are a lot of listings out there with nice photography of the product itself. Why do we need to bother going any further than that?
Okay, so this is a big debate. A lot of e-commerce entrepreneurs just want to take the photo and put it up there. Number one, a lot of sellers use manufacturer photos, which are the photos that come from the manufacturer that they bought the products from wholesale. And every e-commerce seller is using those photos. So you don't have anything to really differentiate you from any of the other sellers that are selling similar or the same products on the platform. The second thing is using a professional model, especially when it comes to fashion, which a lot of people want to get into that space, especially in Amazon and Etsy and so forth and so on. So models know how to show clothing. Posing is actually a skill and an art at the same time. And anyone doing it does not mean that it's going to be shown properly. And so like I like to say, like in our recent ebook about photos, is that, you know, your best girlfriend that is probably absolutely beautiful, that you think should have always been a model, is probably not going to convey that same type of beauty that she has in person on camera. Interpreting beauty and in a garment on camera is very different than doing it in real life. So using a model for that purpose is really important to show the garment or to show the product. If it's a kitchen appliance, hand models know how to show a kitchen appliance and how to add value to that image through posing and demonstrating the product. And also, not using a professional model can lead you in other areas, can lead to problems. Like, for example, getting someone to show up on time. If you're producing a shoot by yourself and you're using a lot of amateurs, you're going to be constantly trying to get people to show up on time. And that's a big issue because, you know, time is money, as we always say. So getting a model to show up on set on time that's unprofessional is one of those additional hurdles. Getting someone to show up properly prepared or properly groomed for a photo shoot is also another thing. So that's why you see a lot of photos on, like, for example, Amazon, where the models look like they don't look like they're professional. They come out looking very amateur. And that has less to do with the person in the photo than it is the fact that they're just not prepared to do that kind of job. And that comes out in the photos.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. And you do see a lot of very strange looking photos on Amazon with clothing type things. I'm thinking particularly of the ubiquitous back brace, for example, which everyone seems to want to sell now, and things like that, some buff looking guy who kind of, you know, they're good looking, you can see that, but they look really kind of awkward and a bit like one of those plastic figures that you used to get, Action Man figures, you know what I mean? They look almost plastic. They don't look real. They don't look comfortable. They don't look like a human being somehow, even though they clearly are. And there's a lot of that around. So tell me a little bit about, let's deal with the most basic thing first then. Let's assume that somebody wants to do some model photography and they want to do it themselves. What sort of classic mistakes do people make? You've already mentioned a few of the things about awkward models. What are the classic mistakes if you try and do it yourself? You've watched YouTube videos, or maybe, let's face it, you've watched 100 YouTube videos, because that's how it works when people get into this stuff, right? They overdose on social media and they listen to 100 podcasts. I'm probably feeding that. Sorry, guys. So what sort of things do you come across when clients have come to you with a big fat mess? What have they been doing that's wrong? And what should we avoid?
Should we do instead? A lot of times it is just using the wrong type of model to fit the brand. So at the basic level, you have to use models that speak to your audience. So for example, the back brace is a really good example. The back brace is supposed to give you posture and improve your posture. So if you spend time hunched over a desk, it's going to help you straighten up your spine and, you know, have good posture, like you walk with books on your head. Using the proper model to demonstrate the use case for that is really important. So what is not good is using someone that is already like Mr. Fitness to convey that message, because those guys don't have a problem with their posture. It doesn't mean that you have to use someone that does have a spinal problem because they were hunched over in their computer, but you need to have someone that can convey that. So using a professional, you can do before and after photos. You want to pick it in their demographic. So for example, let's just say like a working mom, which in our industry translates into a commercial print model that has been sitting at her desk all day, you know, and she's hunched over the computers, and then she has to carry the baby and into the car, and she's constantly bent over. Then that's a really good example. And you want to use images, you want to create the images using that model, where A, she looks like a mom, she looks like a working woman. And you want to get images of her sitting at the desk, you know, hunched over typing. And then you want to get the after picture of like what she looks like if she's using the back brace and it's reminding her to sit up straight. Some other use cases is carrying a baby. For example, carrying a baby is very taxing on your back. Every woman, whether you have children or not, you learn that through life somehow. And using a back brace, showing a woman carrying a baby hunched over, also carrying groceries and her purse on her bag and the baby, and then showing an after photo where the model is wearing the back brace and probably performing her duties better than she was before. And like I said, in all those images, you want to use a mom that is an image that is relatable, or a model that is relatable. And so that if your target audience in a back brace is probably going to be people that sit at their desk all day, people that carry things all day, and a perfect demographic, in my opinion, without doing any research, just knowing the space and knowing my industry, is to use a commercial print mom that looks model that looks like a mom. And you can do that same thing. You can duplicate that with a man as well. You definitely don't want to use a fitness person or a buff guy to do that, because that's not the person that has the problem with the spine.
Excellent. Thank you. So again, a lot of the time is the thing that I'm always banging on about. So this ties in nicely with this. So if any mentoring clients or course watchers are listening, please take note that it's all about the person in the end. The only person in the entire equation, it always strikes me as an e-commerce seller, is that's going to give you money is the consumer. So you might as well really get in their head and really understand them. And the first thing is, if you don't show your consumer in the photos, that's an obvious no-no, as you said. And the other thing is, when you're designing a product, when you're marketing the product, everything you do needs to refocus on that person. So thank you. That makes so much sense. And the before and after photo, it's a simple concept that's been around in like the weight loss industry for decades, right? But
yes,
people forget about it. And thank you for putting that across so clearly with a nice, clean example. Okay, so we've talked about, let's stick with this sort of Amazon type photography for the moment before we go plunging into video. And you know, that's going to be huge. We all know
and
that.
Instagram, the most
Instagram,
exciting
there's
thing.
Just lots of stuff to talk about. But let's hold our horses for a second. Just let's talk about what are the other issues that you see on your average product listing on Amazon with the photography there. There's sort of meat and potatoes of what we still do these days.
Oh, God, yes. So one of the funny things that drives me crazy is when people try to superimpose in the white background. So in the first image of Amazon, you have to have, it's supposed to be all in white, right? And so a lot of people try to shortcut that by retouching out the background and around the model or the product so that they get that white background. And that's the worst thing. You can tell. And now consumers are very aware of images because that's all they're being fed all day, through all the feeds and everything. And so you can tell. Sometimes it's just really bad. And a lot of times they haven't even taken care to smooth out the edges between the white backdrop and the product itself. They've just, you know, left the rough edges. Sometimes they've even Photoshopped the actual product trying to get the white background. So I've seen that, and that's really poor. Also, it's using the manufacturer photos, which I mentioned earlier today. That's another pet peeve of mine, because someone that looks at images all day, I know where those photos came from. And a lot of consumers see the same photos. You can type in bodycon dress on Amazon and you will see different listings with the same photos over and over and over and over and over again. And I do think in the future, Amazon is going to reinforce having very, you know, specifications around e-commerce photos on the platform. And I think because that's just going to help with competition and listing and so forth as the Amazon ups the game kind of like every year or so. But now you can just go in there, like garlic press is another example. There's a million and one garlic press. That's like the number one product that new e-commerce sellers go to every time that they get into the business. And they use the same generic photos over and over again. Someone that's going to win that category is going to be really inventive and really creative with how they use that first image listing. And I've seen some really great examples of that. And then also further down, it's no longer good enough on Amazon just to have that one white on white photo. You now have to have lifestyle photos and use case photos. And that's where you're seeing people really gain an advantage and really boost their listings, is they have more to show and more to tell about their product and how to use it and how it can improve your life. So I think the same thing applies with individual categories and with images as applies to like business in general. There's a couple of industries that are never going to go away. That's weight loss, dating, and how to make money. And the same thing applies on a smaller level to all of these kind of listings, is that people want to know how you can solve their problems, how you can help them improve their lifestyle, whether it's losing weight, making more money, or finding love. And so you want to be able to communicate that in some kind of way. And I know it seems like left field, or like I'm coming from Mars when I'm talking about how to market a garlic press. But let me tell you something, anybody that cooks wants to see in an image how that garlic press is going to enhance their cooking experience, which in this case is going to make the food taste better. It's going to make them be able to prepare the food faster, and it's going to make their family happy.
This is deep stuff. I love the fact that when I spoke to you for that, you know, because you got in touch, or I found you, I can't remember how we met, but I remember thinking, okay, so a model's perspective, that's going to be really handy. But when we spoke, I thought, wow, you're an incredibly articulate marketer about this stuff. And that's a fantastic blend of that practical background you've got and this very high-level thinking. I love the fact that you brought up the biggest markets in the world, finding love, losing weight, making money, and you're trying to tie that into a garlic press. Now, that's what I call marketing. I like that. It's very ambitious, but it's true. Like, eventually, people buy stuff only for one reason. That's to change how they feel, whether that's taking drugs in the most extreme case or alcohol, or they're buying a garlic press. It's because of that hit of dopamine that you get when you buy something, because you imagine it's going to solve problems for you in your life. Now, garlic press probably isn't going to make you a great cook or make your husband love you or your wife think you're amazing, but I guess people think that it might, right? So I love the fact you've gone that deep already. That's amazing. So coming back to how we put that across, let's talk a little bit more about this use case, as you put it, and lifestyle photos. People bandy the word lifestyle photos around. What do you understand by the word lifestyle photos, and what, how would you go about using that? I mean, first of all, what are they for? What are they trying to do for our listing? And secondly, how do we do it?
So what we've become really good at, and, you know, I can relate this to a larger topic, like about how we've gone through the Industrial Revolution and the nuclear family and everything, and media's part in that, and really images or in selling, in using images to sell on e-commerce platforms is a smaller part of a bigger story that we tell as a society. And that is how to exist in the world, right? That's all we're doing. And when we're marketing these products, we're helping people figure out where they fit in society and where they fit in the world. And so lifestyle photos do that. Lifestyle photos are just an example for anyone of how to be, right? And so how to be with a garlic press, how to be with your family, how to be fit and healthy, and what you're supposed to look like and what you're supposed to do. And so when you're in these listings, when you're creating these listings as an Amazon seller, what you're doing is dictating to someone, as this is an example of how to be in the world. So when you see those pictures of like the dinner around the table and the garlic press, the first photo is the garlic press and the second photo is the woman cooking and the husband kind of like looking over the counter and with that smile, like an approving smiling face. And they know that maybe in the far blurred background, you have the kids playing at the kitchen table waiting for dinner. And then that third photo, you have the family at dinner and maybe it's Italian because that's the most common food type that's associated with garlic, and they're around the table and they're happy and they're celebrating and everyone is getting along. That is the idyllic American family. And when you're selling something that is essentially an American product, and that is where we are telling people how to be in the world and how these products are going to help you be in our society. And that's all it is just a distillation of media down to the smallest aspect of consumerism. And right now that is like a listing, an individual listing on an Amazon platform.
That's the most amazing answer. That's like almost a philosopher's answer. That's incredible, but it's so true. I mean, amazing. And by the way, any cliches that anyone's got about models and I mean, you smash everyone. I mean, this is really deep thinking. This is like Seth Godin type thinking. I love it. I think it's fantastic.
Thanks. You should tell him that.
Yeah. I don't know him personally. I know some friends who do, but you know, I'm one person that I may one day try and get on the podcast, but this is a bit too sort of niche down and practical, I think, for him. But I love it. So fantastic. And what you're basically, how to be in the world. I love it. So you're basically giving people an image of, you're reinforcing, I guess, some cliches or maybe their desires as well. And I love the fact that you picked up on the detail, like garlic press, that implies Italian. So have Italian looking people, or at least Italian food, maybe spaghetti or whatever. That fantastic. I mean, it's like a great film director would think this way. So this is the level of detail that you get into. So I'm beginning to see why, you know, you've got to hire somebody with that kind of brain, apart from just the mechanics of hiring a good model and the right kind of model and make sure they turn up on time. This is much deeper stuff that we're plunging into here. So tell me a little bit more about how you can see the big picture here. How would you sort of go about, if I sat down with you and said, you've already answered some of these questions, I guess, but if I sat down and said, I want to sell a back brace, what's the process that you go from me having a product and some vague ideas to ending up with the listing? Have you got a particular process or a sort of simple checklist or anything like that?
So it's a mixture of both. Every customer is not the same. So and every listing is not the same. And every product, even in the back brace market, which is the new garlic press market, everyone is doing a back brace. I've got a few of them here. Like people have sent me a few of back braces to try. And they're all the same. So just a matter of how you sell it. And so what first thing I do is like listen to the client and hear them out with why they got into the space, what they're trying to achieve in the space, and figure out how we can help them in terms of content creation. And since we've kind of been down this road with like back braces and stuff, a lot of times they're thinking very simplistically, like, oh, I just need, you know, to get you or a model to put on the back brace and do a front back profile. And we get a lot of that. We just want it on white front back profile because they're not really thinking beyond that. And what I try to do is help them think next level. Is like, okay, well, I researched the market. There's a lot of people competing in this space, but you know what I haven't seen yet? And then I kind of pitch them some ideas. And of course, I always have to scope it within their budgets. That's really important because, you know, like doing a dinner of four with a garlic press, that's an expensive budget. So, it's, you know, and then the more locations you have to do and stuff like that, that goes into the budget as well. So I really try to come up with some ideas that fit into their mental model of the way they think about their customer and their product. A lot of times I leave them with a lot of things to think about and we have to get on the second call or something because they're like, oh, I never thought about that before. Oh, I don't know how many people are listing this product and what they're doing. Let me look at this. And once we're through that discovery part of our relationship, then we're able to really do something that creates something that's tangible. And a lot of times that is the actual shoot itself. And so the process with actually shooting with us is you have to send us the product, of course, because we can't shoot without it. Sometimes we will buy the product if you provide, instead of you shipping it to us, you provide us a promo code or something, and then we purchase the product on your behalf and we get the product. We spend like a day or two playing around with it. If it's clothing, fitting it and so forth and so on. And then we have to resource all of the things that we're going to need. So we own our own equipment. We're completely vertical. We have our own studio and stuff like that. But sometimes when it comes to additional locations, like if we don't have the right office space or the right desk or the right kitchen, then we have to go out and find that stuff. It's Los Angeles. So there's that exists everywhere, which is great. We have an endless amount of resources where we are. And everyone here is very open and understanding of the filming and shooting process. So it's not a difficult thing for us to do. It's actually a beautiful thing that we can actually do this here. But we have to do the footwork in some cases, you know, and then we start piecing together the shoot. I still actively involve myself in every process, every step of the business. So sometimes I'm actually the one modeling for products, which you probably can see on our site. We have other models. We have a plus size models we've expanded to because the plus size market is getting very popular, and men and babies and stuff like that. And then we really just go through the whole process. And once we've scoped out your shoot, and then we execute, we start doing it. Whether it's a one-off with a client where this is their only photo shoot they're going to need because they have one product, or whether they're a subscription client with us where we're shooting for them every month or every couple of weeks. And once we create the theme and the branding for their brands or their line of products, then it's just wash and repeat every time they send us new stuff that they want us to shoot for them.
Great. Wow. So it's quite an involved process. I love the fact that you're going on locations. It's starting to feel more and more like the film industry. So, and obviously Los Angeles famous for the film industry and, you know, as you say, very geared to it. So that's a great plus you've got on your side. So tell me a bit more. One thing you mentioned when we spoke before the show is about brand consistency or rather the lack of it. So tell me a little bit more, how does that work in terms of listings? Because obviously a bunch of good, separately good photos doesn't necessarily make a good listing experience.
So on Amazon, one of the beautiful things about Amazon is that if you're a seller, you have individual listings and those listings can be very different from each other and completely unrelated. They don't all have to be connected or cohesive. I think this matters more when you are a fashion brand or if you're trying to establish an electronic brand. So we've seen like a few people in the Amazon ecosystem launch like headphone companies, and with the headphone line of like the wired headphones like these and the buds and so forth. And I think for a product like that, where people, where quality really matters, it's really important that the company has brand consistency and the images don't look like they came from somewhere else and they look like the company is established. For clothing, I think the same thing is true. There are a lot of established clothing brands on Amazon. And so I think the biggest issue with Amazon is that these individual listings don't look like knockoffs. And so if you're really trying to run a fashion and e-commerce business on Amazon, then really having that brand page and having image consistency across your products is really important to gaining and keeping the trust of the customer. Because they can trust you with one product, and then if they get the next item and it doesn't fit as well, or it doesn't look as good, or the colors are not the same as they were in the images, then you're going to lose that customer. And so I think that's really important. I will add in the beauty space. So there's a lot of beauty products launching on Amazon, and there's a huge trust issue because there's a lot of fakes and a lot, or what we call in the beauty world, dupes, which are duplications of high-end cosmetics. But a lot of times these cosmetics are filled with toxic ingredients that can harm the customer. And so in the beauty space, this is actually a big topic of conversation now, because there's so much pushback with regulation over these beauty brands. And a lot of the products are coming out of China and they're filled with lead and other toxins. And they're marketed as a cheaper or more affordable products next to a high-end American brands or European brands that we're more familiar with. So I think brand consistency, if you're trying to launch a cosmetic line or lipstick line or something in that nature, skincare on the Amazon platform, that is actually really important. The consistency, also this goes above and beyond of our topic here, but also listing your ingredients, listing your sourcing, and stuff like that, because this is a sensitive area in the beauty space right now. And I think it's a bit of a tug of war of where it's going to go and how legitimate it's actually going to be.
Great. So I'm just scribbling some notes here. As ever, folks, you will find the notes at amazingfba.com/blog, which it should say /podcast, but you'll get the RSS feed if you do that. So don't do that. But I'm scribbling notes here because there's lots to do. And I know that you produced a very beautifully produced document that I read. It's 51 pages, lots of images though, so it doesn't take long to read, which will make it available at amazingfba.com/model, I think it's going to be the easiest one to remember. I'll make a note of that now so that I don't terrify my VA. So great. So brand consistency, really, I love the fact that what you're putting across, I guess, the visuals are a metaphor, but they're more than that. They imply to the customer very strongly, or the client, the end user, that the quality of the photo basically kind of shows the quality of your brand, or at least that's how people perceive it, right? So when in fashion, in electronics, and especially in beauty, that trust issue's got to be overcome. So thank you for flagging that up. And yeah, I would say that the simple version of beauty is don't source anything that goes on or in your body from anywhere but Europe or America. I mean, certainly not China. The Chinese themselves don't trust the Chinese manufacturers. I mean, they're British brands, for example, of breakfast cereal will apparently sell for double the money there that they sell here, simply because there's a trust factor. So yeah, you've got to, as you say, I mean, who knows how that pans out in terms of the regulatory side and what Amazon does, but at least we can make sure that our photography implies that we are trustworthy. So that's great. Some really, really practical tips. Let's talk about some of the nuts and bolts of getting photography done using an agency, because obviously I can imagine that people are thinking, oh gosh, this all sounds very involved. It's going to be very expensive. Am I going to get a return on this investment? So how can you respond to those sorts of fears?
Yeah. So actually we're very affordable and we've kept our prices. We've had inched our prices up over the years, but we've kept our prices very reasonable, especially because our customer is generally a new e-commerce entrepreneur. So they're relatively new to the space. They don't have a system in place and they're kind of all over the place trying to do everything themselves. We're there to help you along, to gain your trust, and hopefully become your long-term partner. That's why we start out with a discovery call, which is just a consultation. It's no pressure, just to answer the questions that you have and also offer some advice. I really recommend that people use a content partner because it takes, number one, a load off. It's a lot more work to do yourself, and you're going to waste a lot of time and money. A lot of people, most people that do, that are not in the content space, and most e-commerce entrepreneurs have never done anything professionally with content before this now experience. And they're really trying to navigate through it. And it looks simple as I'm just going to take my iPhone and take a picture. And then I'm going to use the same picture across all platforms. And they sometimes spend a lot of money doing that and you know, a year or two with no sales. And then they run into someone like me and they're like, oh my God, well, where were you all this time? And I have spent so much money. That is the number one thing that we hear from us, from our clients, is I have spent so much money and I haven't had a sale yet. You know, I have some traffic. The traffic is here. The traffic is there, but the traffic isn't consistent. We're here to help you not have that experience. And so that's the process for us. And once, like I said earlier, once you place the order, you ship us the product, we go through the whole process with you of shooting and so forth and so on. Our delivery system is online. So we just upload the photos, you get an email, and you're able to download the photos. And we do keep all of our files. So if you lose your files or your computer crashes or Amazon takes down your listing or something tragic happens, we always have your images and you can always reach out to us and ask us to send them to you again.
That's very reassuring. Yeah. So you never know with files. So yeah, it's one of the things I would say is that obviously it's really important to have good photos, but it's just really, really critical. I can't emphasize enough, apart from having a decent product. If you get a great product and you spend, I don't know what, $5,000 on it, and you spend like, you know, $300 or $100 on your photography, you basically throw most of the $3,000 or $5,000 on the product away, in my opinion. Here's just one tiny example from the 10K Collective Mastermind, which I run. There's one guy in there doing about $1.5 million a year in revenue. So he's not stupid. He's been running for a long time and it's profitable and it's going great. And we just sort of ripped apart his product photos the other day in a mastermind. Not that they were bad, but they could be better. And he came back and he's increased the conversion rate from 30%, which is very good, to 40%, which is really great. So that means if he's sending any traffic to that, it's converting at a better rate. So his profit margin's higher. He's getting through the stock. So turning it over, you're not getting stuck with stock. So everything works better when you've got a great conversion. And that's just an example of one little tweak from a very experienced seller. So if you're not experienced, just think what a huge difference a photography is going to make. I mean, it's just, I can't emphasize enough how critical it is. Anyone's listening is even thinking about going cheapskate on the photography, like, don't do it. Don't do it. Because as you say, you spend a lot of money on the product. It's absolutely meaningless to do that and not spend it on the photos. Anyway, rant over, but I just had to get that out there because I see it too often. So what have you seen? That coming back to the sort of return on investment on photos, I mean, it's very hard to give statistics on this, but have you got any sort of answers to the return on investment for getting it done for professionally versus doing it yourself?
So a couple of examples. So I have sold myself on Amazon. So I'm familiar with the whole process from a first person. So I'm not just on my soapbox talking to other people about it and telling them what they should do. I've actually done it myself. My boyfriend has done it. And I worked with him on his product photographies. And I think one example I shared with you before was what do they call them? Breast pedals. One of the things was like all the listings on Amazon, the breast pedals, you know, it was just basically a model attempting to be modest, but also showing you that there was a flesh toned silicone breast pedal covering her nipples so that you couldn't see that, you know, her body through like a sheer garment or a lace garment or something in that nature. And so what we did was take that to the next level and say, well, the whole point of the breast pedal is that you're not supposed to see the breast pedal. And so we figured out like how to create imagery using lace, using sheer tops and so forth and so on, that we could show breast pedal underneath the garment, but you actually didn't see it. So the whole point is that you, the customer, or anyone doesn't see the breast pedal, but it's there. And we played around with different versions of that. And his ranking, oh God, I can't remember the exact numbers, but I can give them to you so you can include them in your notes. His ranking went like through the roof, and he was selling, I think, I don't want to misquote, but he was selling like several, many, I want to say over like 10K volume a month in breast pedals. So they're cheap, you know, generic product. And what we did was turn them into something that differentiated from every other seller on Amazon. Another example of that is, so I sold linen pants, and these pants are fold over linen pants. So they are elastic waist. The elastic waist fold over, and then the leg part of the pants are linen. And there was already existing sellers on this, selling these pants. And what I did early in the Amazon is piggyback their listing, which means that I listed on their listing as a seller selling the product at a cheaper price, so that I can gauge how much volume this product could potentially have. And that listing, they had very generic on white photos of, like, they're really nice on white photos, but that's just all they were. And what I learned from, and so what I did is I didn't do Fulfilled by Amazon. I shipped the products myself. The reason why I shipped the products myself, starting off and piggybacking this listing, is because then I could see the addresses and the names of the people that were buying the products. And what I learned is that most of my customers were coming from the South, or from like Colorado, and from the Midwest, and they were all plus size women that were buying these stretch linen pants. And then I, admitting this might be criminal, I don't know, but, and then I Googled a lot of these, like almost every customer I would Google, and I would look for them in Facebook, and I would see what they looked like and what they did for a living. A lot of them were call center workers. Some of them were like tech support, you know, call center people, or they were sitting at their desk, or they worked in the medical field and they were sitting at their desk all the time, or they were bending over. But almost all of them were size 1X, 2X, and 3X. And them buying those sizes and then seeing their images, it really conveyed to me, oh, well, this customer is, you know, plus size, and they have this type of body where their belly hangs over like a traditional waisted pants. And so they need something that stretches, that doesn't leave a mark on their belly, that's not tight, like around their belly all day long. And if you're sitting for 8, 10, 12 hours on the phone answering calls, what women know, and I think some men probably have this problem, but as women, what we know is that anything that's constricting your waist, if you're sitting for a long time, causes a lot of water retention. It's very uncomfortable. It's actually very bad for your organs. And it's highly uncomfortable. And so I understood why these women were buying these pants. And so what I did was hire a plus size model that was my friend that I knew. And I created images of her sitting at a desk, and she, you know, I made sure that she was like a size 16, that she had the belly of a plus size of my customer that is buying these pants. I took her out in the street. We did some photos of her walking, so you could see the ease of moving in these pants. And we dressed the pants up to make them look like they could be worn to like a dinner party. We dressed them so that they looked professional, and we dressed them so that they looked casual. And really what we wanted to say to this customer is that these pants are good for you in every occasion. We have them in every color. So they came in cocoa, navy, black, white, coral, aqua. And we did this in every color so that the customer can see that you can wear these all season long. You'll be comfortable in anything that you do. And you also be appropriate, because one of the issues that plus size women often have is that the clothes that are comfortable for them are also not appropriate for every occasion. And so we wanted to convey that to them. And then we created a whole new listing, and we titled the listing like Fold Over Linen Plus Size Pants. And then we posted these photos. We listed these photos. We changed the copy, and that listing sold. We increased the price by like 3X. and that, and people still bought these pants at like $60. And I kept like, at first I sold them at, and on the listing, I was selling them for 10 when I was piggybacking the listing. Then when I created my own listing, I started selling them for 30 and then 40 and then 60, and women were still buying these pants. So that was probably like my highlight reel of illustrating how better product photos can increase your conversions, and you can increase the price astronomically, because we just created a whole new value for pants that cost us, I think they were like nine. So you buy them in packs, you know, two small, two medium, two large, and they were about $9 a piece. And so for something that we were basically paying like $40 to $60 a pack, we were selling at $40 to $60 a piece.
That's quite the amazing story. Just to clarify that last bit, the boring old money side. So what was your sort of profit on that? So you were selling for $60, and what was that cost per piece roughly?
Yeah. So we were selling a per piece like 60 at the peak for $60. And then we were paying, this was also a great thing, is that the wholesaler, so we're downtown Los Angeles, and there's all the imports come through the port of Los Angeles. So all the clothing and manufacturers and stuff, all the showrooms are also downtown. And so I could actually buy on demand, because the showroom that was selling these pants is literally like three or four blocks away from me. And a lot of times they have sales. So if I would go online and I would see like $9 per piece for a six pack, right? So in the plus size, that's a 2 1X, 2 2X, 2 3X. Right? So you can do the math, nine times six pieces. But then if I would go in the showroom, sometimes they were having sales, clearance sales on certain colors in certain packs. So like, for example, white, no one is buying white in the winter. So I could get the packs for like $5 a piece. So a five times six for $30, I was getting that pack. And then I could then go and still sell them at a higher rate. And some of the people that were buying, they worked in the medical field, and they actually needed to buy white, or they needed to buy aqua or something, because it matched the colors that they were supposed to wear to work. So it was kind of interesting to see that, and to be able to, if I ordered it online, it was one price. And if I could just walk into the showroom, I could buy the packs for cheaper.
That's quite an amazing story. I mean, that's, first of all, that is what we call serious customer research. I mean, as you said, like, yeah, okay, bordering on, you know, spying. We're not going to say that word, because maybe you don't want lawyers getting in touch. But yeah, you're Googling everyone, looking on the Facebook. I mean, basically what you did is you took huge amount of trouble to really, really, really understand exactly who was buying, exactly who they were, what their problems were, what their life was. You know, they were trying to be in the world, to use your fantastic, yes, very exactly. Southern Californian phrase. But they were trying to figure out how to be in the world in a way that the world wasn't making it very easy for them, because they were trying to look professional and also get comfortable. And the combination of the two, they were feeling very, very hard to get the right garments. And you really have pointed out to them exactly how, I guess, the work you've done there is the classic marketing adding of value, because you did add value, but you didn't by changing the product. You did it by articulating the exact value of the right product for the exact customer, right? So you made the product to market match. You articulated that, or the message to market was beautifully tailored. And that's just like a textbook example of just fantastic customer research. And also piggybacking on somebody else's listing to find out what was going on is a very smart little hack, actually. That's not something I've come across, but that's also very smart. But that, the most important thing I'm taking for that is amazing customer research, and then followed up by, you know, you kind of created a brief for yourself by amazing research, and then it was quite clear what you needed to show. You needed to show those people being comfortable and appropriate in each situation, and those are the things, and the results financially speak for themselves. I mean, selling something for six times, you know, normal cost, that's an incredible result. So can't take it any further than that. I mean, that's got to end this episode, because that's just a gobsmacking story. So we're going to leave it there, and we're going to come back and talk about influencer marketing and all the other sexy things. So thanks very much for sharing that incredible story with us.
Absolutely.
That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now, over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs, give 80% of the outputs. Which are the critical few for you? Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, learn the critical few, then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.